Hello, good people, and welcome to a very... Okay, we're all a little bit hungover this morning. It's episode 11 of the Brunswick Beer Collective, and I guess we're after Good Beer Week now when you hear this, so you'll have sort of a different view of the world. Maybe you'll never drink again. We don't know.
Well, you often say that you'll never drink again, but I think you pass an age where you just realise you don't mean it. You might say that when you're 18 the first time you get really drunk, and then you just gradually learn that's a lie.
Well, then you have understand the harsh realities of this world.
That's right.
Which usually require more alcohol.
Correct.
So, I'm Chris Shorten, with me is Jeffrey Chi.
Good day.
And we have a very special guest host, who is Leon Perkin.
Leon Perkin, that is, yes. Yes, I am here. That's okay, I think it's a common error, the S on the end of Perkin.
Well, I was trying to think of whether it needed it or not, and then I just realised, no, I'm way too hungover to think about that.
That's absolutely fine, I think we're all feeling about that way.
And it is always like this on the last day of... I guess the last day of Good Beer Week. It feels like it should end on the Saturday, but it always ends on the Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. And I think everyone wants to kind of go out with a bang and go, you know, I did it as best as I could. So, you know.
Yeah, I love how it makes it seem like it's some sort of marathon. And it's like, you know, I did the best time I could, you know.
You know, I made it to, like, you know, have many events over 9 days.
Yeah.
I drank, you know, have many hundreds of beers that I did over the week and so on and so forth.
It's dedication.
That's right.
Plus, one thing I'll say, given that we're at the Ale House, is you know, they've had the Kiwi Tap take over for the entire week, and being the last day, they've got I think I haven't checked the tap list, but I assume it's a bit of a mix.
It's a mashup, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if you were here through the week, it's a good chance to maybe grab a beer that you haven't missed out on, because actually getting through them in conjunction with the rest of the events going on would be pretty difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of did the math on this last year, I think, you know, like, you know, if you wanted to drink even just every beer that was on at the Ale House over the course of the week, that would be an enormously difficult task, I think.
Yeah.
You could do it.
Yeah.
But you would have to, I think you'd have to take the week off work.
Yes.
Because it's over 100 beers over the course of the week, and so you're doing like 10, 11 beers a day. That'd be challenging.
I want to say challenge accepted, but the older I get, the less likely that's going to happen.
Yeah, plus being at the Ale House, you know, the smaller serving you're going to get a pot. Mm. So
that's
having
right.
pots of, what, 12 taps?
and all of them, you know, about 6-7%.
Yeah, yes. Quite often you've got a couple of, you know, heavy stouts and barrel aged, maybe barley wines on there. So, with consideration to how you're going to feel when you get to the end of that list,
You're kind of screwed.
Yes, indeed.
But before we get into Good Beer Week stuff, so Leon, you actually you're quite big in the beer scene, but for entirely different reasons to us.
I suppose you could see it that way. It was never intentional. It was always just a labor of love.
Mm.
Enjoying beers for many, many years. And I suppose it was about 2 years ago, me and my friends were posting a lot just on Facebook, you know, on our walls or on each other's walls. Check out this beer I'm drinking, you know, talking about brewing, talking about bits and pieces. Mm. And it got to the point where we then turned that into a group chat.
Mm.
And then that group chat just got messy. And I thought, as a bit of a joke...
as like, it's required for all group chats to get messy.
Right. So it was a little bit of a joke. And I'll explain just briefly kind of where the idea for Beer Thread came from.
Mm.
I also play in bands, and I've done that for a long time. And years ago, a friend of mine created a Facebook group called Gear Thread, which was all about
music equipment
cool. discussion, new releases of equipment. Then there was a for sale posts. There was, you know, deal posts, where to get cheap, you know, guitar pedals and things like that. And the whole thing went quite well. And a lot of those people on there were friends of mine, and they were also into beer. And so the founding sort of idea for this came, okay, Beer Thread, I'm going to create this. And there was a few people I had involved in it when I created it initially, who either played in bands, they like heavy metal, you know, or punk. And that kind of ethic is where it started from. And then I think a lot of people who liked beer, who were on Gear Thread, went, oh, That's the beer version of what we're doing. Yeah. So, so the demographic that kind of grew from that notion was that a lot of people kind of came in with this honest kind of maybe a bit of a punk ethic to them. And that created this really honest sort of non-biased group discussion as opposed to some of the other beer groups out there which are often...
which we shall not name.
We won't name. No, it's just that if... Okay, say for instance a beer group is created by a brewer or someone in a distribution, that they do have a bias sort of, you know,
towards their own stuff
and that's,
or
that's,
whatever.
That's fine and that's fair enough, but that's just the way it is. But I think the reason Beer Thread differs from other groups is because the whole idea behind it is honesty, and we can say what we want. You know, if you don't like a certain beer or if you think something, just say it, and nothing's censored, and I think that's important.
I think that's a good thing.
I'm on Beer Thread on Facebook, and it's just great to see just the community sort of aspect of it, and which you know, there's people all over the world on this thing, sort of posting stuff from everywhere and making each other jealous.
It's interesting. I'd say the majority's Australian, but then there's actually a fair few people from New Zealand, and then there's a few internationals on there as well. And, you know, but generally speaking, I'd say the two major parts would be Melbourne and Brisbane, because I'm originally from Brisbane.
Sorry about that.
Well, when I say originally from Brisbane, that's a lie. I'm originally from Melbourne.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've moved around and I spent a good amount of time in Brisbane. That was the city that I first kind of got into craft beer.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so with that in mind, I think a lot of those friends in beer kind of came out of that. So,
and it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And, of course, I guess moving on, because that's... Like, moving on, but seeing how it all fits together. So, we just had Good Beer Week.
Yes.
The amount of, like, for... I guess you start to see all, like, the same community everywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like for example, like, we saw people on Saturday night, then the following night we ran into them at, I think it was the Gertrude or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
That's right.
And it's just sort of, like, it's not necessarily anything organised. It's just that there's so much like-mindedness is built around, and Good Beer Week becomes and like the celebration of that.
I mean, even during Good Beer Week, when I ran into you guys at Catfish, I mean that was unintentional. Yeah. I didn't know you were going to be there, and that's the beauty of the beer community is you go somewhere and you just, oh, hey guys, you know?
Exactly,
and it's really fun.
Well, given the fact that you know. Well, let's see. So we all met through the Ale House, I guess. Well, at least a lot of us did.
Yep.
And then, of course, we met you through the Ale House. Yeah. And you happened to live over the road from Paul.
Yeah,
not
I know.
Over the road, just across the corridor.
Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I know.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. It's quite hilarious. I mean, I remember... I didn't know Paul's involvement in all, you know, all his endeavours. I just came here one Wednesday and I was having a beer and Paul walked past and I think he was doing trivia and I said to...
That is our normal haunt, yeah.
I said to my partner, oh, there's our neighbour, you know. maybe he's into craft beer, you know. And so it was quite interesting. And then that sort of escalated. I saw him here again and again. And at some stage, I think we just ended up having a chat, having a beer, and then... We spoke more about, you know, what we do and all our sort of
stuff,
nooks and things, and
our side project idiocies. Yes.
You know the funniest thing though, for the longest time, Paul sort of knew you by sight. And he used to tell me, it's like, oh yeah, there's this guy in our building across the corridor. We call him White Jeff because he's got long hair as well. So it's funny how it's all come full circle.
White Jeff.
It's
I
true.
Like it. Yeah, but, no, it is funny. Sorry. Go on.
But we should move on to... Let's talk a little bit more about Good Beer Week.
Yeah.
Because, all right, so Good Beer Week, I feel like... I guess I'll put my opinion out here for a start. I mean, I love Good Beer Week. It's one of my favourite weeks of the entire year.
Yeah.
But the one thing that... I feel like this is probably the biggest one... Maybe the biggest one ever. I mean, the book was big enough that, you know, it would crush my dining table.
Oh, yeah. It's getting quite ridiculous, ridiculous in a good way. Mm. Just, I mean, and for a beer nerd, mm. you look at the book, you look at the events, and you just can't do everything. Mm. I mean, mm. you go, okay, on Saturday there's yeah. six events or something.
Well, we tried to do about six of them last year.
It's crazy, and you go, okay, so there's not only six events, say, for instance, but there's also... Mm. Multiple venues doing Pint of Origin, tap takeovers, rare things here, there, and everywhere. It's crazy. So you've really got to start thinking strategically as to how to do it. You know?
But the big question is, I guess, because venues have to pay to be part of Good Beer Week. We understand that. Have we reached peak beer in Melbourne?
It's a good question. I mean, so there were over 270 events at this year's Good Beer Week, and I was, as we were having that conversation, I think it's good. The explosion in the number of events is good. So if you sort of think about where Good Beer Week came from, it really was just Pint of Origin, like in its first year, right?
Yes.
And I think it's great that those events still have their sort of flagship status and they're still recognised as, like, you know, being important things to have. Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's possible that we have reached a point. I don't know what the attendance was like at some of the events. Like, yeah, have we reached a point where there's just so much stuff on that there's not enough people to
The livers aren't big enough.
Yeah, so I mean, but I think it's great. I think one of the really good things the last few has been the, like, restaurants and stuff getting on board with craft beers. We're seeing a lot of food related events. I think
absolutely.
That's been great.
So that means you can eat as well as drink.
exactly, which is probably a good idea.
But I think when you talk about, you know, the food and beer matching and all that sort of thing, I think given the diversity of beers that are popping up, you can see why that's happening. I mean, take Fox in the Corn, for instance, you know, a place like that where they've got a lot of sour beers. So, you know, sour beers match particularly well with certain foods and you know, with different styles of beer, you can really see why that would be important.
Right. It's interesting.
And also, some of those events also give, say, the opposite to, say, foodies. They give beer nerds a chance to go, okay, I'm going to have this absurdly ridiculous meal with my beer. You know?
Yep.
And so it's sort of like a backwards flip, you know?
Anyway. It is. It'll be interesting to see what we see next year.
Well, I think we can safely assume it will be. I wouldn't be surprised to see it crack the 300 mark event-wise next year. You know, it's gotten to the point where they've had to split up, you know, the Pint of Origins into, you know, say Melbourne, region of Victoria, you know, and so on and so forth, and New South Wales as well. So
The one thing that I think about, so Good Beer Week's here, and people come here, and. They travel and they make an effort and it's a big deal, but it gets me thinking about other cities, you know. Are they going to sort of follow suit and sort of push more for their own things? Because if you look at Gabs, you know, the attendance can only get more affected by the fact that it's in multiple cities.
Yeah.
And so it depends on how much focus they give that the week in Melbourne to ensure that
Well, bringing up Gabs, that brings up our next thing.
Yep.
Because we were at Gabs yesterday, all of us. But Jeff and I, we were with a load of us, and that we were on the drinking side of things. But while we were doing the drinking side of things, you were, Leon, on the other side, where you were helping run Brewcult.
Yes. So I hadn't actually done this before, but I'm good mates with Hendo, the man behind Brewcult, and... I got talking to him over a beer at the Ale House one time.
Really?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Who that's knew that, crazy.
Who would think?
Shocking.
I said to him, you know, if you need a hand at some stage, just let me know. I'm, you know, happy to work an event or something like that. And he said, well, why not Gabs? And I said, yeah, okay, well, that sounds good. Let's do it. He said, well, do you have your RSA? I said, nope. Okay, better get that. So
we've all gone down that road.
Went and got the RSA certificate, and so I was working two sessions. I worked the Friday night session, Saturday day session, back to back, which was slightly daunting at first, just having not done it. But it took me about, you know, I'd say 15 minutes and a couple of beers, and I was all guns blazing after that. It was actually really fun and quite rewarding being over that side of the fence, you know, because you know, you are restricted, obviously, you're behind the stand, but at the same time...
You're representing, in a lot of sense.
You're representing, you are telling people about the beer, you're educating them about the beer, so there's a rewarding sense that you, whilst being a beer nerd, going to a lot of events and doing a lot of things, you're giving a little thing back by saying, you know, I've been here for a long time and I've done this for a while, so now I'm kind of, I want to be on the other side of it, I'll help you out. And at the same time, the other rewarding thing, I think, is you get a lot of industry people, a lot of you know, brewers, home brewers, regular patrons come up, have a chat, talk about the beer, and it can range from someone who's whose favourite craft beer is, you know, a White Rabbit Dark Ale, a more sessionable, easy dark ale classic, versus, you know, people that travel over from the States that have been into craft beer for 15 years, you know what I mean? So
back when it was just beer.
Yeah, exactly. It's
so interesting. I mean, Gabs was awesome for me, but it was partly awesome because the moment I walked in, there was a giant fucking Ferris wheel.
That was really cool.
Yeah, and I think I spent a good, you know, I the only thing I'd had that day was like brunch and a Bloody Mary, and I pretty much walked in, and when the first thing you see is a giant Ferris wheel, it's sort of like, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like there should be some sort of light shining down on it.
It was impressive, and it goes to show just how much craft beer has, just how far it's gone.
The spectacle.
That Yenda can bring in a bloody Ferris wheel.
I know.
Yeah, it's like first time ever inside that building, I believe, which I don't think anyone needed to fact check that. I'm pretty sure you could just say that and go like, yes, it checks out.
And for those who don't know, so Gabs was in the Royal Exhibition building in Melbourne, and it is one of the old, it's a very, very old building. I think it's maybe 1800s.
Must be.
Our friends in the bicycle gangs. motorcycle. Not bicycle. Though that would be amazing, bicycles.
Very noisy bicycles.
Yeah, but just this, I suppose even without thinking about the beer, just the spectacle of having a giant Ferris wheel in the middle of this old building is just, it's kind of marvellous.
Yeah.
But, okay, so we should move on. So let's just quickly, what were our favourite parts of Gabs? What are our picks for people?
Well, I mean,
obviously not to drink, but what did, you know, what worked?
I thought it worked. I mean, I really liked the introduction of the currency card this year. I think rather than buying tokens, you know, you load the money on, can cash it out at the end. That means you just go to the thing once, buy some, and you don't need to worry about, you know, you just put on more than, you know, put on more than you think you'll need. Then that worked really well. I think the queuing system still leaves, like, there are a lot of times when you'd be, say, queuing at, you know, section one, and the queue on your side would be to the wall, and then there'd be four people at section one on the other side of the wall, but you can't see that.
No, so, yeah, it's true.
It was, to further that point, I think it was interesting being over the other side, serving people at the Brewcold stand, and seeing how humans work. They come over in packs, and... Yeah. It's all or nothing. And it was like that the whole time I was working. It was, you'd have no one there for 10 minutes and you'd be sort of just watching people walk past going, are they even serving people? What are they doing? And then you'd have 20 people come up in a pack, line up, waiting to get their beer. And I think that same kind of behavior pattern happened at the containers. It was packed all the way to the back wall where the toilets were. It was lineups that I reckon were half hour queues, and then an hour later it was no one.
We were trying to predict on the table as to whether the lines people were doing it like
numerical order.
Yeah, in numerical order.
Yeah.
And that's why it was like some things worth the other. But then that theory even got broken. So we don't know.
And because there were the two sides, like they were serving the same beers on two sides of that wall. And so, I think at the start of the day, I think the side that we were on had the longest lines, but then it flipped over halfway through the day or something like that. I think some sort of better solution to the...
And the queuing situation, I found it particularly painful upstairs... where the food stands were.
I didn't even get upstairs.
Oh, okay.
Well, other than being on the same level in the Ferris wheel. Did I mention there was a Ferris wheel?
Why it was so painful upstairs, in my opinion, okay, for instance, you're lining up for a burger, the queue is all over the place, to get the burger, and then you have the same amount of people standing right next to the queue waiting for their burger.
Oh, so of course, it's really hard
to actually know where to stand. I think if there was just some regulation, even if there was, you know, those bloody things that banks have, you know, so like queue line patterns and things like that. If there was some things like that, I mean, it might just iron out some of those bugs.
I agree. But the one thing that is good, though, in the queues, people are generally very well behaved. I think, you know, more so than in any, you know, I think the craft, this whole community aspect, you know, everyone's just like,
the common good is craft beer.
That's right, you were there first, and everyone like, no, there's no pushing, there's no, so, exactly. all of that is
everybody
is,
drinks.
Coming back to your question about favourite parts of Dabs. I mean, aside from the spectacle, i.e. the Ferris wheel, aside from the spectacle, I mean, the sort of things that I really enjoyed were kind of the cheeky little corners that people weren't really taking advantage of. For instance, there was a stand opposite the Brewcot, behind the Brewcot one, an AIBA stand.
I saw that.
Next to the AIBA stand was a fridge, AIBA fridge, and it was all the winning beers, a bunch of rare American beers, and all beers from all around the world were in that fridge, and $2.20 a taster, $4.40 for half a glass. And so, I mean, I found myself often going over there and getting, you know, half a glass of Deschutes Dissonant, half a glass of bloody Firestone Walker American Red Wild Red Ale, things like that, things that like a Barrel Works one, you know, things that aren't in Australia at the moment, and to you just don't see them, and I guess that's where it helps kind of having some knowledge of what you're looking for, what you like, because those were amazing. Also, the local tap house stand. The local tap house stand had a sour bar.
I didn't even notice half these things. Yeah.
I was drinking like full glasses of Cantillon Rosé de Gambrinus, full glasses of Cantillon Gers, the Rodenbach Vintage 2012. So things like that,
holy
you know.
Crap.
And I found myself, dare I say,
maybe
sacrificing the Gabs beer, the Gabs beers that I could have had for some of these rare beers.
And that, I mean, and that's a really good point, actually. I mean, you do get completely obsessed with the whole paddle planning and getting through
Gab's blindness.
That's right. Whereas you're right, you know, this there actually was a big opportunity to try all this other stuff, and maybe that's what I know quite a few people who've been to multiple Gab sessions, and maybe that's what they do. Maybe they have one where they just hit the festival beers hard, and another one where they just go like, let's actually explore what's at the rest of the festival, because it's not just the first time I went to Gab's, it literally was pretty much just go drink the festival beers and just recycle. But now it's so much bigger than that.
It's so much bigger than that, and you've got brewers at stands, and they're often serving beers that we don't see. I mean, beyond the Gabs beers on offer, there's a lot of beers just around at the stands, and you can go and try these beers, have a chat to the brewers, and it can be a really enlightening and educating experience.
You know, everyone gives a shit. It's
nice. Exactly. Yeah. I know.
It's awesome.
Alrighty. We should move on.
Sure.
And we're back, and we're onto beer number one, and we've been sipping this for a little while because, well, I chose it because it was the lowest alcohol one I could find here. No, I think it's only 4.4%, but what is it?
It's the Semiconductor Session IPA by 8 Wives, obviously one of the great Kiwi breweries that has been featured at the Ale House this week.
Yeah.
So Session IPA, so 4.4%, so quite easy drinking, and I think we all needed something easy drinking to kick off the day. But I found we were just talking about this during the break. It's really kickstarted
the system. Buoyant,
like, I think I sent you a message saying I think that the pre-beer should be the first beer, but now I'm thinking I could totally have had a different beer right now. This cured me.
I agree. I 100% agree. I think we're all just, it's a mutual buzz. We're all feeling it. We're all thinking,
okay,
after the amount of drinking we've been doing, I think you feel weird when you're not drinking. You're like, okay, I'm holding a beer, you know.
I mean, there was like an entire 8 hours last night where I was sleeping and not drinking.
That's right. Me too.
What's up with that?
I know.
It was weird. It was really scary, actually.
So I think we've all had this before, but what do we think about it, really?
I honestly really, really like it. I mean, it's probably a beer I often don't order, because if I come here and there's a bunch of 8 Wives beers on tap, I mean, they brew some amazing beers. Yeah. You know, they've got their tall poppy, they've got their hop-wired
They've got the C4, the coffee brown, there's so many.
And it's not to discredit this beer, it's just the fact that those beers are desirable. You come here and you're thirsty after work and you see, say, Hop White on tap, you know that it's going to be a punch in the face. It's going to be a great, delicious beer. Mm. And
it's like a reward for you.
It's a little bit more boozy, but it's a classic and it's hard to dismiss that. Whereas this beer, given that we're easing ourselves into this, I think is a really good choice. And given 4.4%, it doesn't really... it's big aroma, hoppy, tasty.
Yeah, it's not the knock you around. It's just there to say, hey, how you doing?
Mm. Yeah, and I think this is that sort of and we've talked about this a few times. It's the evolution of craft beer in Australia. Like we all got obsessed with boozier and boozier beers and hoppier beers. Yep. Where's the next 12% imperial stout or triple IPA?
Yeah, I think it's over there.
Yeah, but you kind of forget that actually, low alcohol beers. And, it's ridiculous now that we're talking about 4.4% is low alcohol. Yeah. That's just the way it is. And it's like this and the Pirate Life throwback IPA.
Oh, yeah.
They're fantastic both two beer. Amazing beers.
I'll also mention just quickly, as we know, I've been working with Brewcon. Mm. They have the Reset Robot. So
that
at 3.5%.
I really enjoy.
At 3.5%. And I'll tell you what, it was an absolute cracker during the festival because it was a really good way. And it is what it is, a Reset Robot. You have a full glass of that. You walk around for a while and the low alcohol just keeps you going, keeps you sustained. But it's not going to knock you around.
But it does fit with the case. And we've made it a few times here for... good low alcohol beers are still good beers. Just because it's low alcohol doesn't make it a bad beer, which is I suppose what we've been conditioned to think through years of pretty bad low alcohol beers, light beers, I guess.
Absolutely.
But what are other people saying about this?
What are other people saying? So we've got a whole lot of no comments. So Mac K at the Lime Bar calls it a gateway drug.
That's not bad, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a gateway beer. If you weren't into beer and you didn't like beery tasting beers, this would actually be quite a reasonable entry point.
I think where it's at, it's pretty hoppy. Yeah. It's got a nice bitterness. And I suppose it always helps when it's the first beer of the day. Your palate's sort of clean and you're not,
And you're appreciating every part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
Theoretically.
Mm.
Ricky P, lots of tropical fruit smell and taste. Very hoppy, but not too bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Tristan O, good hop aroma and bitterness, but still very light / thin mouthfeel. Hard to keep that IPA mouthfeel with lower OG. I assume that means original gravity.
I guess so. The OG, that TV show?
Isn't that OC?
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's been a long day.
Already. What else have we got here? Lots of no comments. Rob L, hoppy and nice from Warkworth, so it's come a long way. Mm-hmm. Good accompaniment for Game of Thrones. So he's drinking it out of a Winter is Coming House Stark in his photo. So
good old House Stark.
Good to see that he's supporting the good guys.
Yeah. Are there any good guys in that show? They're just guys.
Well, yeah.
It's hard to say.
All right, people. Out of five, what do we give this? Considering it being what it is.
Can we do something, point something?
You've got point... So this is basically to come with a composite untapped rating. So you can do up down to 0.25s.
Okay. I would say I would give it about 3.8, meaning... Like I'm judging that on the basis of any beer or any 8-wide beer, not necessarily being a session IPA.
Mm. Yep.
As a session IPA in its field, there's probably not many beers that would be better than this at that alcohol. Mm. But I'm saying overall, to my palate, to my taste, it's decent. It's nice. Mm. Anyway, I'll let you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think Leon's pretty much summed it up well there. I think it's more than a 3.5, which is sort of our benchmark for good drink again.
Yep.
So I think 3.75. Yeah.
I was thinking 3.75 as well.
Okay.
I can't give you 3.8 because it doesn't appear on there.
Oh, no worries.
Although we have
3.75.
3.75. Good work, team. And we're back, and we're on to beer number two. And this is probably the most perplexing thing I've seen in a really long time. maybe I need to see more perplexing things.
Well, maybe we're still a bit hungover. There are some perplexing characteristics to this beer.
So, all right, I'm gonna describe what it looks like, and then people can add in the details of what it is. So, what it looks like is it should be a sour, or maybe one of like your frilly sort of beers.
Yeah.
But what is it?
So it's the Her Majesty 2015 release. So that's by Yeasty Boys, another one of the
fine gentlemen.
The fine breweries from across the ditch. It lists as an American pale ale on Untappd, but it lists as a blood red ale on the Ale House tap list
board, yep.
Which I think is a pretty accurate description of
it
what we're
looking at. It is scarily accurate, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And seriously, it's sort of like yesterday at Gab's we had, I had, what was it, the, it was like a pale stout. We'll get to that. Pale stout, and it looked like a pale ale, tasted like a stout.
Mm.
It was really weird. And I feel like this is sort of like, I'm expecting it to be a super fruit beer.
Was that by Stockade Brewing?
I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah, it's the Fallen Angel. Yeah, I think that's the one.
Okay, they're a new brewery that have popped up in the last few months. Anyway, that's another conversation.
But what do we think of this?
It looks like it looks like a Rodenbach Rosso, or it looks like... it looks almost like a Cantillon Creek or something, and every sip I take, I keep thinking it's going to be a sour red winey beer, but it's nothing like that. However,
it's really weirding me out.
It is a really it's a cool color. I like it.
It's perplexing and strange, but really cool.
It sort of works, and the flavor's there. It's tasty.
Mm. But I suppose the big question is, and this is the important one. Okay, so we're all totally mesmerized by the color of it, crazy color of it.
Is that enough?
Exactly. if it wasn't that colour and it was just a regular red ale, which is, I guess, what it is, really.
Yes.
How would we consider it?
I'm not blown away by it. I mean, like, I would definitely... I mean, I'd drink it again. Like, it's not bad by any stretch. 7.6, it's at the punchy end of the pale ale spectrum. I'm not really... It doesn't taste that boozy, I suppose.
I feel like Yeasty Boys... sometimes create really absurdly, I suppose, hectic inventions with what they put out there, right? And I think this one's a very safe and general... I mean, I think the inventive part of this beer is the colour.
The colour.
But the flavour and everything else going on is fairly stock standard. Mm. I mean, but it is a very pleasant, nice beer. Yeah. And I think, given the time and how we're all feeling, it's probably... not a bad choice.
It makes us feel like we're being healthy.
Yes.
It looks like it must be fruit-based.
It's almost beetroot.
Exactly.
And if you think about beetroot, it starts to taste a bit beetrooty. No, it doesn't really.
No. All right, what are people saying about this?
What are other people saying about it? So we had a couple of the just short comments. So Davin B at the Ale House Project, delicious. Michael H at Gabs, terrific.
Excellent choices of word.
All for beer at the Ale House Project. Must be one of these. I don't know. Maybe they're a fellow podcast. Who knows? I've not heard of these guys before. Slightly earthy, but with hint of sweet beetroot aroma.
Beetroot.
God damn it! I'm equally scared and impressed.
Taste is predominantly earthy with light body. Matthew B at the Ale House Project. The beetroot is wonderful. I suspect there is beetroot in the brew here.
Maybe that wasn't just a clever punch on the colour, but I legitimately wasn't joking when I said I was joking, but I took a sip, and because I thought of beetroot with the colour, I thought, I tasted it, and I thought, geez, it is a bit beetroot sweet.
Well, maybe that's how they
maybe
got the
that
colour.
Is, that's that, where that, it's...
It must be, because David S. at the Ale House Project, what a colour, beetroot beer, complex and tasty. So this this shows you...
We got served here.
This demonstrates the benefits of the research that we didn't do.
Okay. Hey, but I actually really like the idea that none of us knew that.
And you got it anyway.
But we were wondering...
We're such alcoholics.
The thing is... Now we speak of it, and now we're looking at that. I think the earthiness and the beetroot and the fact that it's a red ale, that's why we were perplexed, because it's kind of this almost...
It's a magician's one. Yes. You know, you're watching the left hand, but the right hand is pulling the rabbit.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Correct.
All right, so what do we give this? All right. So much pause.
I need to drink it again.
The tricky thing too is we're rating this beer after a few sips when it's fairly cold too.
I was about to say the same thing.
I'm wondering how a little bit more time, a little bit more warmth might actually
change. We have to consider these things as that they're poured, basically.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So I think I'd give this 3.5. I don't like it as much as I like the previous beer.
Yep.
And
three and a half is on my mind too.
It's a solid 3.5.
It's a Christoph scale. It's a 3.5.
Yep.
Alrighty, people.
Very good.
Very
good.
I know. That people, we should finish up there.
We should, but we should ask one more question before we go. And our publican here asked us to ask this. But Leon, what is a Perco pour?
Well, okay. Gee. It's essentially a really bad pour.
Style.
I suppose pour should be spelt P-O-U-R.
Yes.
Poor Perco.
Not P-O-O-R. It started as a bit of a running joke when me and my twin brother on Beer Thread were posting a lot of beers early on.
Mm.
I suppose maybe at the earlier stages when we didn't maybe figure out how to pour as well as we should, and we were pouring beers with a lot of head and posting them online, not letting them settle enough. And because we were both doing it, I think that the joke turned into something of a spectacle, and I tell you what, I couldn't avoid it at Gab's.
No.
I had people come up and ask for a Perco pour.
Yep.
Yes.
And at one stage, how's this? At one stage, I went to pour a beer first of the day, pulled down the lever on a reset robot, and someone behind me had pulled the gas out of the keg because they were trying to fix something, and the head just fluffed over the top, and then the first thing I had was a guy next to me say, I'm going to get a photo. So I have a photo of me on Beer Thread holding a beer with terrible pour. Anyway.
All right.
Amazing.
I'm going to keep an eye for Perco pours from now on. Let's finish up here. So we've been the Brunswick Beer Collective. We've had our special guest, Leon Perkin.
Perkin? Yes, Perkin. No worries.
Jeffrey Chee.
Thank you.
The usual guy.
The usual guy. Not special at all.
And the usual guy, me, Chris Shorten. And we'll be back for our last episode for the season next week. Thank you all.